I'm not compulsive obsessive, but
for some reason, don't let me down with you. All right. So let's go through a review real quick. I told you that this is actually an introduction course, and I wanted to, you know, obviously you should know that from the name, but I wanted to be sure to make you understand, you know, get you to understand and open up about the notion that I am an introductor, not an instructor, educator, or teacher. That's the way I think of myself, and I hope that y'all will you know, kind of think in that way. This is a kind of bringing you into philosophizing. Here's the deal. Y'all paid $700 for this course, I think. Or your parents paid $700 for this course. Or you at 35, as you paid off your financial aid debt, paid $1,000 for this course. You know, interest. If all you want out of this course is the basics of what is metaphysics, what is aesthetics, what is ethics, what is this, who is Plato, who is Aristotle, who is Hume, who is Descartes, who is Kant, who is Nietzsche, who are these people, I can give you a list of concepts and I can give you a list of names and I can say for free you could have learned all this in about 3 weeks by reading Wikipedia. All right? So we don't want this course to just be an encyclopedia course. We want it to actually be a bringing you into philosophizing course. Okay? It's a course, right? It's a way. Okay? And then we talked about philosophy, the term, tried to not commit the etymological fallacies. And basically got to a point where in our taking apart the notion, which is usually in taking it apart, it's called the love of wisdom. And I said, really, in a sense, it's a sort of tending toward or tending for or caring for skillfulness, trying to develop skillfulness and appreciating skillfulness when you see it and appreciating skillfulness in yourself and trying to foster it and bloom it, right? And basically that skillfulness, that wisdom is the fact that human beings are oriented. I'm walking around in circles because that's basically what philosophers do their entire life. Human beings are oriented towards seeing. Right? I mean, it's just right here. The only thing higher than us is the top of our brain. Higher than our eyes is the top of our brain. So it's about seeing. We're doomed to see. But seeing, you'll understand, because we emphasize our eyes a lot of times. It's an interesting thing. We do begin to forget about the other senses. The other senses are often dominated by vision, right? Because in one sense, it's our doom to see. Here, seeing is in the broadest sense of the term, right? It's because seeing touch something right now. I mean, you're all touching something, but on purpose touch something. Not somebody else, but something. Just touch something, right? You're touching it, right? I don't know if as I'm walking past, you can smell whatever crazy combination of sandalwood and coconut and whatever I put on today. I don't know if it's there. Maybe I myself am beginning to show. But, you know, the smell's happening. And you're hearing me talk. And maybe you had a little bite to eat earlier, or you still have in your mouth a little taste of some Coca-Cola, or something like that, right? Notice what's different about all of these senses to vision. You don't think about them all the time, and vision is distancing, and every other sense is there. It touches. So in one sense, we talk about how our eyes fall on something, how our eyes touch something. But at the same time, vision gives us distance. Right? Over the summer, I taught a couple of courses And an interesting phenomenon when people would begin talking about seeing and hearing is they would always do something like this. And I could have done it with y'all, but I'm going to spoil it down. Just go ahead and do it this way. They would always do this. They would say seeing and hearing. Not seeing and hearing, but seeing and hearing, right? So they're already like out in the world. It's already outwardly oriented. You're what you hear happens in your head. Now, that's, of course, one of the reasons why music is so powerful. Words and rhythm and beats and tones that are all happening inside of us. So that there can't be any sort of separation, right? I was walking over. See, look at that before you slip. I was walking over from my house to the coffee shop. This cricket is blessing us with his presence today. That's great. That's a good sign. If it's a cricket and not someone's stupid alarm. And I was listening to Beyonce's Freedom on the way over here, and it just hit me really hard at some point. It's like, oh, that's so beautiful, you know? I was like, my God, freedom, right? Well, and I thought about that, and this is one of the things we're going to be talking about. This, we're doomed to see. If I'm going to introduce y'all to philosophizing, and it's not just going to be you paying us $700 for what you could just get out of a Wikipedia, it has to be not just that we take on the responsibility that comes from being doomed to see, that we do vision, but that we think in terms, and this is a very big thing with Carl Jaspers, we think in terms of freedom. So you now know that wisdom means doomed to see. What do you think freedom means? Just off the top of your head. Pierce, what do you think? If wisdom means doomed to see, freedom means?
Doomed to be free.
Doomed to be free. It's an oxymoron, right? At least the way you think of free. Right? The way you think of free. That doesn't make sense because free is the ability to do whatever, right? Or, you know, but now we got this doomed to be free thing going on. And I suggest you take a listen to Beyonce's Freedom and get a copy of the lyrics and look through them and think about them, right? I'm 50 years old. Or 52. I'll be 52 years old in October. October 5th, I'll be 52 years old. Mark the date down. Black people and white people didn't go to school until I was in first grade. They didn't go to school together. And Waxahachie, Texas. 1970, I really want to cuss right now. 1970 fracking one. I'm 6 and a half years old. An African-American family comes into a restaurant that we used to go to in Italy, Texas. And the old woman who owns it tells them they can stay if they'll go in the kitchen and eat with the help. This is not your grandfather, 52 is not that old, folks. I know you probably think it is. 52 is not that old. I'm not talking about some 80-year-old, those 80-year-olds and those 75-year-olds, they all lived through all that stuff. But, younger people and stuff, catch that. If that happened to me when I was 6 and a half years old, that means that there were people who were born that year who would just be in their mid-40s right now, who were born into an America where freedom, right, where freedom was still being struggled for, and still is. It's always being struggled for because freedom doomed to be free, right? The doom of doomed to be free is that we always are in struggle. There's There's a lot of struggles that we're in, and we don't really even know the kinds of struggles that we're in, right? I remember I got really upset because I was in one of the first integrated first grade classes in Waxahachie, and I had an African-American woman who was my teacher, and I didn't understand why that family was being asked to go eat with the in the kitchen. And it upset me, and I wouldn't go back to that restaurant until that old woman had died and someone else took it over when I was 9. Well, I'm not saying all that to say, oh, look how awesome I am even as a kid. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the kinds of things that we struggle with always and that we can take for granted because we don't see the struggles of other people because all of us are also struggling. Right? From billionaire to a person who has not a single penny, everybody feels put upon and everybody feels like they're struggling. Right? But you can look around you and you can do, you know, there before the grace of God go I kind of thing. And you can recognize that there are real struggles that are far more important than the fact that you're having to fill out a form in triplicate or the fact that, you know, you didn't get to buy a new pair of shoes to go with the other 57 that you own this week because you had to do something else. Those kinds of things. Everybody struggles. And to every person who is struggling, your struggle is extremely real. But philosophy, as I said, the doom to see, endearing yourself to wisdom, endearing yourself to this doom to see, is to get that distance so that you can utilize your rational faculties to look around you and see, do comparisons of your struggles and other people's struggles, and not let someone else get you to a point where you can honestly believe that your struggles, which are usually not that much, may not be that much, are as horrible as some other people's struggles. Or that gets you to see that your struggles and your struggling, you're in some kind of competition with other people that are struggling, so you have to like beat them at your struggle before, right? So that you let sociocultural conditions keep people who have genuine roots in real struggle with each other, similar struggles, end up being compartmentalized and separated and divided because it's supposed to be some kind of competition. You know what competition means? What do you think competition means? It means to struggle together. If competition meant to struggle against someone else, it would be contrapetition. Competition means to struggle together. But we live in a society where y'all are all now. My heart's been filled up by the Spirit. I'm in a preaching mode today. I told you I come from a long line of Pentecostal preachers. Y'all are a generation of people who are constantly being belittled by your elders and by your grandparents, your parents and your grandparents, because you become too soft because you don't know how to compete because you've always gotten participation medals. You've always gotten participation awards. Like there's something wrong with participating. What really matters is learning how to win and how to lose. Well, that's right. It is good to learn how to win and how to lose. What really matters is that you participate. And not use this bull crap that competition is struggling against someone who wants what you want. Right? Opening yourself up, seeing for yourself what the real distances are between you and someone else, what the real distances are between what your struggles may be and what the struggles of someone else may be. And how can you participate? How can you participate in helping someone else who's having a struggle? Because now let me show something else to you, and I will use etymology, and I will hope that you don't think that I'm committing the etymological fallacy, because I just want to show you something that's very interesting that gets hidden over the course of time that was originally understood. Doomed to be free. This word and this word come from the same word. Friend and free come from the same word. Doomed to be free. Freedom is not an oxymoron. Because it doesn't mean doomed to be free. It means doomed to be friends. Because human beings are social creatures. We live in a social environment with social structures and social belief systems that we have taken on and don't even know that we've taken on. And it's those kinds of things that sometimes get us to a point where we begin obsessing on something like freedom, and we take for granted the idea that we understand a concept like freedom, which is something that we build our whole lives on. A European friend of mine said to me, it's interesting to me that Americans concentrate on freedom so much. In Europe, we concentrate on equality. And I said, that's because in convincing ourselves that it's all winner-take-all competition, contra-petition, struggling against each other so that I can have mine frack everybody else, we have lost sight of what this word means. Now, you're going to say, Keith, I didn't take an introduction to preaching. You're right, you didn't. And here's the big problem we're going to struggle with all semester. I'm 52 years old. I have 52 years of life experience. I've been philosophizing, literally, for reals. I've been philosophizing since I was 12. I've been philosophizing. I philosophized before that, but I re-woke up to what I was able to find as a child that they began to squelch in me from 8 to 12. I reawoke and began to philosophize again, reading little bitty things that I could understand. So I've been philosophizing for 40 years. So one of the problems we're going to have in this class is that y'all have all this life experience. People tell you you have no experience. That's absolute horse pucky. If you're 12, 20, or 100, you have life experience. The problem is that you don't have a lot of comparative life experience. And it's a little harder for you to see the distance, to see with some distance what your experience is, right? So you're still in this phase where, you know, 3 years seems like a long time. 4 years seems like a long time. You remember how long it took you to get from first grade to sixth grade? Remember how long that felt?
Probably like didn't feel like anything.
I bet it, you know, it's this really interesting thing because you're looking at it, and you're like, oh, you know, here I am, I'm born. I mean, you don't remember this. Somebody told you were born. You don't know that. That's just hearsay. But we'll put it in parentheses because maybe you weren't born. Could be somebody was lying about it. But so you're born and you start your life cycle. And you're looking at it, and oh, I got all this time ahead of me. And you're kind of like measuring everything from when you actually first begin to remember something. So like maybe from when you're like 2 or so years old up to the time you get to high school and go to college. Time kind of goes by sometimes a little quick, sometimes can be a lot slower. Actually, when you get older, what you're going to do is you're going to realize that, hopefully you'll remember this, you will recall Keith saying, and it will probably bear itself out, that when you look back on how you felt going from first grade to 12th grade, it seemed like forever, right? That's 6 to 18. When you look back on what it felt like to go from 18 to 30, it's, whew, And when you look back on what it felt like to go from 30 to 40, boom. Right? So I came up with a little drawing to kind of explain that a little better, and it has to do with being doomed to see. And that is, when you first look at this, it all seems like it's a straight line. I'm going that way, and I can kind of look back this way, and it seems like it's far because it's a linear sort of distance thing. You won't know, you didn't know that you were born, and you won't know when you die. These are things that are not given to us. But as soon as you were born, you died. That's your doom, right? We're mortal. That means that we're born to die, right? And when you complete this circle, the interesting aspect about this, that distance sort of thing is, it's like, you know, from first grade to college, like 12, 13 years, seems like a long time. But see, when you get over here, when you're about 35, and that circle's begun to go, and you got a little different kind of distance, you see this and you realize that felt like a long time, but it actually is not that much time. Because now you can see across, you can see back at your life, and everything begins to go really fast. Time, you're going to tell me time, Keith, is subjective? Well, damn, you know, they say that people trust people who cuss a lot, but that's against the rules. So, what?
I had somebody explain this to me, you live to be in first grade, like, all the way to first grade, and you feel like it's been a long time, and because that's all the life that you live.
Mm-hmm.
Say you live to be, right. 20, and time starts speeding up, it's because you've lived more years, so a year just seems shorter to you now, because it's one year seems like a long time when you're really young, but as you get older,
it begins to compress, right? And you get that circle thing going on. And so that's right. And so, you know, what we're talking about here is this ability to get distance, to see distantly. And in philosophy, we call that reflection. That ability to look at stuff, but now we're talking about seeing in that broader, that vision, envisioning. That vision in the broader sense, that going in and taking a look at your life, going, you know, gathering evidence and seeing how people are living and suffering and struggling and doing the things they're doing, and then going in and comparing your life and their life, and then getting some distance from yourself and getting distance from the situation, right? But when you begin doing that, you've got to be ready. Because you have to understand that everything you're doing, you have accomplished because you are within a lineage of human beings, right? And when you start going in and you start questioning yourself and you start getting distance in yourself, you begin to see the people who've had the largest effect on your life. You begin to see the sociocultural structures that have the biggest effect on your life. You kind of begin to learn what your lineage is. Philosophy originally started off as a kind of lineage because philosophers would trade with other people, and those people would sometimes become what you might call friends or students. And then those friends or students would teach other people. And then over a while, there'd be kind of a little group that would develop, which back in the days they called schools, right? So school wasn't a place, it was a lineage of thought, right? And sometimes the lineages of thought, like the lineage that Plato started, Plato was a friend of Socrates. And Plato started a place called the Academy, which is, you know, a lot of these words of school, academy, a lot of these words come out of these people philosophizing together, right? Plato started this place called the Academy. And oddly enough, by the time you get that school, by the time you get 300 years away from Plato, you wouldn't recognize it because thinking keeps doing what it does. It keeps flowing and changing and growing. And while they understand that their lineage begins with Plato, they don't necessarily agree with everything Plato says. And in some instances, they seem to be going counter to the things that Plato taught. Why?
Because new age of thinkers.
Yeah, because there's always new experiences. I need y'all to learn how to. I need y'all to not learn how. You already philosophize every day. You just don't know you're doing it. Philosophy's not very good if you don't know you're doing it. You get a lot of shitty philosophy. Damn it. Darn. You get a lot of bad philosophy. But the deal is that we have to philosophize. Y'all just don't realize how much you philosophize. Philosophy that you don't know you're doing is bad philosophy, and this poor philosophy, unhealthy philosophy, weak philosophy. Okay? Over time, this notion of lineages in schools becomes a little more tenuous. But at any rate, you know, you begin to learn what your lineage is, who taught you, what teacher had the most impact on your life. You know, I look back now, and I knew at the time, and I can say today, that Ronnie Hastings, who was the physics professor at Waxahachie High School, had an enormous impact on my life. My mentor had an enormous, Richard Owsley, who helped found the department here of philosophy at UNT, had an enormous impact on my life. As you look back at your life and you look at your lineage and you situate yourself and you begin to ask questions, you're moving in the direction of doing this so that you can become stronger in the struggle of being in the world, where as you grow older, you realize through this kind of real engagement inside yourself of critical reason that there's not as many certainties as we'd like to think there are in the world. Right? In one sense, most people's notions of certainty is something that you would find in a mathematical equation. Someone would say, you know, they want to say the sun will rise up tomorrow, the sun will rise up in the east tomorrow, just like it did yesterday and always has done. I know this certainly. They want to say that like they were saying one and one is two. But in real, in the living life that you have, in the struggle, it's a struggle. So you know it's a struggle. I can tell you know it's a struggle. It's a struggle. In the struggle that life is, where right now you're young and you don't know sometimes, maybe unless you've had some sort of a health issue, you don't know. You know, you don't struggle to breathe. You don't struggle to eat. You don't struggle to do a lot of stuff. But it's a struggle. And in that struggle, there's a lot of uncertainty. And if you can't accept that uncertainty, if you're not willing to be uncertain, you won't actually ask real questions. You'll ask superficial, shallow questions. Questions that you know will have an answer so that you don't have to feel insecure. See, right now, this first week, the next 2 weeks, y'all don't let me keep doing stuff like this the whole semester. First 2 weeks, I got to get y'all for the 50 minutes I have you 3 days a week. Next week, we got a day off. See? It's a struggle. I got to get y'all to a certain point. And when we get to that point, and we'll know it because the alchemy of the room will change. Right? It'll be a lot less Keith suddenly getting overtaken by a spirit of truth he has to like pass along. That's one way I like to talk about it. That's not really what's going on. I just get excited. Enthusiastic. The God is in me. But it will move away more and more from that and more into the kind of like sort of back and forth we had for a little while on Monday. Right? A lot more of that. And when we get into your discussion group things, you've all been assigned to a discussion group now. When we get into your discussion group stuff, I'll be meeting with your discussion groups a couple of times in the semester for an hour, so I can actually talk to a few of you at a time instead of 45. This lends itself to talking at. So, but that's one of the struggles that we have right now. But what I want y'all to do over the next couple of weeks, while I get up here every now and then and I get filled with the Spirit, I want y'all to get, you know, do your exercises, read your books, read the books I've assigned, do the exercises, pay attention. See, I sound like a regular old teacher. Pay attention. And get ready to ask more questions. More and more questions. Get ready to be uncertain. It's okay to be uncertain. I mean, I don't want you to like practice this uncertainty like when you're like climbing a rock or something, but that's a different kind of uncertainty. But I do want you to, I do want you to really be ready for, a moment, and this may only happen with 10 or so of y'all. Be ready for a moment halfway through the semester, and y'all come to me, and you let me know about it, because I don't want anybody to suffer unnecessarily. But be ready for a moment, somewhere in the middle of the semester probably, where you get a little panicked. Because you start doing something, I'm not really sure this table's here. I don't really understand what a floor is. It's like, that's not going to happen to me. You're probably the one it'll happen to. And I'll say, I'm not sure you're here asking me a question. No, I would never do that. But this is the kind of thing. See, I got to study, I went through a very unconventional education. I got an education like the old philosophers got an education, right? I dropped out of college and I became the assistant to the founder of the philosophy department, Richard Owsley, and I was his secretary and assistant for 9 years that I didn't go to college because I was studying with a philosopher one-on-one every day, 7 days a week sometimes, which is one of the reasons we used to get in screaming matches. Helping him write his articles, you know, typing for him at first, and then actually helping him do research, and then actually co-writing with him. 9 years I did that. Then I went back to school. Dr. Owsley used to always say, the problem with Americans is not just that we think in terms of freedom, but that we also think in terms of that doom, that duty, that doing. We think in terms of we have to do something. Something has to be done. You know that lady from your church who's always screaming something. What about the children? Well, something must be done. What about the children? Something must be done. This was Alice's model. He's not the first person to say it, but I mean, I think that if I keep putting it on the internet long enough, he'll get the attribution. But anyway, don't just do something standard. Something has to be done. If you actually look at the last 250 years of human history that has led, and this is not a contemporary moral issues course, so we're not. I mean, if that's the direction things end up going, we'll go that way. But I'm not going to get into the debate of whether or not human beings have caused climate change. You cannot, okay? But we can do this. We can get a little bit of distance where we can talk about it, and we can say whether human beings are the exact cause of climate change or whether this climate stuff happens all the time. We can't deny that all the stuff that we do has an effect on it, even if it's just a natural process. Because we put a lot of crap in the air, and we do a lot of crap to the ocean. Do a lot of stuff, right? almost always a lot of the stuff that's come, that's happened over the last 250 years has been motivated by the motto, don't just stand there, do something. When people push back against Black Lives Matter, hashtag Black Lives Matter, they say hashtag All Lives Matter. Hashtag Black Lives Matter doesn't mean that only Black Lives Matter. It means if all lives matter, hashtag Black Lives Matter. When people push back about that and they go, oh, all lives matter. They're doing something. They're not standing there and thinking about what's actually being said. They're just reacting. They're just doing something. Something's got to be done. Now, some of this is done by people, very pure heart. Some of this is done by people, those people like in Italy, Texas. That was 50 years ago or 40 years ago, whatever. But, you know, this is the issue. Don't just do something, stand there. Do something, stand there. Well, I mean, standing there is doing something, but it's not doing something in the sense of I'm going to be active. It's doing something in the sense of I'm going to think. Hashtag Black Lives Matter. Hashtag Trans Lives Matter. What does that mean? Not, I have to revolt against that. So, stand there. See the distance. Willingness to be uncertain and the will to ask questions happens at the intersection, the spot where you decide to stand and look around. All right? And this is where Jaspers, and this is in the first chapter of the Jaspers, I want you to have Dr. Owsley's foreword. It was the last thing that he worked on before he died. His foreword to the book read. I want you to have chapter 1 and chapter 2 read for sure, for reals and for sure. On Friday. I'm not done yet now. Still a few more minutes.
1 and 2
for Friday. Okay, it's in the syllabus, but I just wanted to make sure, you know, because y'all have got to have figured out by now, Keith is, there's no way the way Keith talks about stuff and hopefully will get us talking about stuff that we're going to like march through that syllabus exactly as it's laid out. We're going to do it our turn. Y'all get ahead and y'all start reading and stuff. Y'all be reading The Pedagogy of the Oppressed. You know, do about 12, 15 pages a week of that. Starting with, that's something else. I'll put it up on an announcement today. Start Pedagogy of the Oppressed with chapter 1, not with the translation introduction or the introduction. Right, start on chapter 1. Okay. But at any rate, but philosophy is always with us. We are always philosophizing. Why are we always philosophizing? Because we're doomed to see. Why are we doomed to see? Because if we don't look where we're going, if we don't stand a minute and get our bearings and look where we're going, then we're probably going to hurt a friend. Because we're doomed to be friends. This is all a great big huge gesture of thinking that we're doing these 2 weeks. They're just gestures. You're painting with gestures. You know how when you paint or when you draw, you don't do detailed drawing. Y'all know that? You don't go in when you draw something. You don't go in and start, you know, if I was going to draw you, I'm a horrible drawer, but if you were going to draw something, I wouldn't just go in. If I was going to draw you, I wouldn't just go in, right? And I'd start going, okay, I'll start with his hair, and then slowly work my way down detail by detail by detail. No, I'd do something like this. Start there.
Great.
Go up.